This is Scott Berguin of KSOW Radio in Cottage Grove, and we are privileged to be able to talk to Jimmy Massey, who's a co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Jimmy's participated in the Bring Them Home Now tour. He is home right now, and so we get a chance to talk to him. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm doing fine. It really is a privilege to talk to you, and appreciate your taking the time to share with us, converse with us about. We'll just see what that's about, I guess.
Sure.
Jimmy, you are, like I said, you are at home right now, and but you will be rejoining the tour, or at least being in D.C. for the 24th of September. Is that right?
I'm not. And I can explain to the listeners. There is a trial going on in upstate New York, and they are called the St. Paddy's Day Four. They're part of a Catholic workers group, and they used a tactic that the Catholic workers group used during the Vietnam War, where they went in and they poured blood on the recruiting office floor. And then they knelt down and they started praying and saying the rosary, and they waited for the cops to come and arrest them. Well, it went to trial, and they're stayed locally, and it was a hung jury. They were going to kick it out when the Fed said that it was over $500 worth of damage, so they picked up the case, and now it's going to the federal. So I am going to be a representative as far as a witness to talk about the atrocities that that I witnessed in Iraq compared to the actions of what these people did, you know, which is worse. So everything is going to be going on in D.C., there's going to be this huge trial going on in upstate New York where the government, these themselves are actually going to be on trial.
So, right. Well, is this where in upstate New York? You said what town?
The Binghamton area.
Binghamton, okay.
Yes.
So, that in itself is a very, would be an incredible thing to be able to cover and to get information from. So maybe we can talk about that later. It might be good to touch back with you. It's obviously of huge significance. And so are you, having some experience from the Vietnam era with trials, and I won't say any more than that at this point, other than, you know, having to take responsibility for some actions that I took back then, as well as other people. It's rare that the one gets to, in a sense, I guess you would say, put the government itself on trial, or the policies on trial, I should say. Is it look like that's, I suppose you never really know until you're actually called whether you're going to actually get to testify. Were they able to do this in their first trial that was that got the hung jury?
They were able to bring in, vets from the Vietnam era and, you know, talk about that. So, you know, of course, when it went to a hung jury, they thought everything was good. And then the Fed. So I guess, you know, at that time, they didn't have any direct representatives from the Iraq War.
Sure.
To, you know, speak out. So now they have the opportunity.
Well, let's hope that they're successful in many ways in both getting yourself and others to give the testimony, and that it impresses the jury significantly enough to I guess if their goal is to be found not guilty, then that'd be great. But I know for a lot of those people, oftentimes it's just it's a victory just to get the into testimony the reasons why they took the stand they took.
Sure. I just hope that we're able to do that while we're up there.
Okay. Well, again, I do want to talk to you more about that in the future. Right now, what I'm interested in, I think what a lot of people will be interested in, is there's not, I know you've been telling your story like a lot of the folks that are on the tour and even before the tour. You've been telling it more times than you can count, but I know folks would like to hear, if you're willing, to I guess the question would be how you got yourself, what moved you to get involved, to found the Iraq Veterans Against the War, and where you've gone from there.
Yeah, basically I went through like a two-stage process where, you know, I had these epiphanies in my life where I realized you know, what I was doing was wrong. And the first time, well, recruiting duty, I was on recruiting duty from October 99 to October 2002. I really began to question, you know, this economic conscript problem that we have in America, because I was enlisting young men and women into the military, i.e. the Marine Corps, and the only reason that they were going into the military was for tangible benefits, financial security, college money, and so on. So I began to see this trend, and it was working class people and below that were normally being recruited. So, you know, I started reading things like Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, and then I began to understand the industrial complex within America and how we thrive upon this military-industrial complex and how we based our whole system around it. And so when I got done with recruiting, you know, I was still a career Marine, but I was a little bit jaded by what I saw, and I just figured, well, you know, if I stay in the military, maybe that I can make positive change in some, you know, weird direction. But I was sent directly from recruiting duty to the front lines of, in Iraq during the main invading force. I was there from March, as far as the main invading force, March 20th of 2003 to May 15th of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, during that time, took place a lot of killing of innocent civilians, especially at Marine Corps checkpoints. So I began to question, you know, overall, you know, my conscience began to bother me, and I really started to question the, you know, the Marine Corps' motives and goals, you know, what they were trying to accomplish in Iraq. Just to give you an example, over, you know, the 3 month time period that I was there, we killed 30 plus innocent civilians.
Mm-hmm.
at various checkpoints, the youngest being about 4 years old and the oldest being about 75. So I saw, you know, the needless killing of civilians, and I began to grow a conscience, and I began to express my, you know, my dilemma to my command.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me an ultimatum, you know, I either get along with the program or they were going to terminate my existence from the the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose to terminate my career as a Marine, and was medically discharged December 31st of 2003 after I hired an attorney. They wanted to label me as a conscientious objector. When I hired the attorney, they basically, you know, the buck stopped there, and they said, well, we're going to go ahead and medically discharge you out.
Okay. So was this an honorable discharge? Is it
yeah.
going that? Okay. Well, that's good.
Any medical discharge is already rated as a honorable.
Okay. All right. There was a whole lot packed in there to that. You're talking about your experience, about 3 months
right.
In Iraq. I mean, I can't imagine, and none of us, unless we've have been in that same situation, can imagine the having to make those decisions that you and your unit had to make, the pressure, I'm sure, to make those decisions, and then the impact on each individual. What I'm envisioning is I imagine the orders are, and the fear level in, you know, everybody involved, including the, you know, you and your unit, is so high. And from what I've heard, there's a real lack of interpreters and understanding of the folks that we are, you know, in country, the Iraqis, and all that adding to some really devastating, disasters.
Yeah, you know, we were basically given carte blanche to mm-hmm. kill anybody that we thought was a potential terrorist, and
mm-hmm.
we treated everybody within Iraq as a potential terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these conflicts that you just stated, you know, was, or this heightened sense of alert was instilled into the Marines via the intelligence reports. We were receiving intelligence reports that the Fedayeen Republican Guard were mounting suicide and terrorist attacks. You know, they were using civilians as human shields, loading down ambulances and police cars with explosives. Now, let's flip the coin. What were the Iraqi people hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had already taken over a radio station, and we were blasting propaganda, and we were telling the Iraqis to go about their everyday normal routines, that they work for the government, continue to work for the government. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here to establish a democracy. We're your friends. We're here to overthrow Saddam. And we also dropped tons of leaflets through through the air explaining. So the Iraqis thought that they pretty much, you know, go about their everyday, you know, businesses and whatnot. And then when they would come on a military, you know, checkpoint, you know, and they didn't slow down in time or didn't react in time, they found themselves in a very dangerous situation.
Right. Right. So in a sense, they were, what you're describing is they were kind of set up. Unknowingly to them, of course.
You know, in order for you to have a war, you have to have an antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at psychological warfare and how it's used, that's the perfect tool that you use to instill fear and to ultimately gain control of the population. Because now the population becomes fearful of even stepping out of their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're starting to achieve your objective. But what they didn't expect was the rise of the insurgency. The U.S. military didn't plan for the rise of the insurgency as quickly as it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And were ill-prepared because of Rumsfeld not giving enough troops at the very beginning of the war. And the Iraqis took advantage of that situation. They know that the military presence is low. And
mm-hmm.
that they can basically, rue the day as they use strategic attacks against the American forces. Now, where did the insurgency come from? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
And in my view, the insurgency rose to power because of the brutality of the American forces.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraqi people saw the brutality of the American forces in places such as Abu Ghraib. And at these checkpoints, how do you tell a 25-year-old young Iraqi male that just witnessed his brother being brutally murdered at a checkpoint, how do you tell him not to pick up an RPG and retaliate?
Right.
That's the question.
Mm-hmm. That's, in fact, there's a report that just came out. There have been others preceding it. Anthony Courtizan, I think that's his name. I've seen him before. He's a military analyst, and they did a study, and one of the things they found was that, one, what's been called the insurgency is only about 10% are actually fighters from outside the country. And
right.
They want us to believe that it's more than that, that it's mainly foreign fighters. But, you know, anybody who studies just on the surface guerrilla-type warfare knows that it can't be sustained if it doesn't have popular support.
You know, the thing about it is the Iraqis, you know, that's how they finally got rid of the British rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just guerrilla-type tactics of warfare. They've been utilizing the same defense mechanism for getting rid of people in their country that they don't like for centuries.
Right.
So, and here comes the Americans.
Right, right. Well, it's another one of those parallels to Vietnam. We picked up for the French and didn't seem to learn from their experience, and we're not seeming to learn from history in this case either. And unfortunately, it just hit 1,900 U.S. soldiers, at least 1,900 killed. Who knows, untold thousands of Iraqis that have been killed in this, in the 2.5 years since the invasion.
Yeah, and let's go back farther. Let's talk about the 12 years.
Of the sanctions. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And actually we're finding from things like the Downing Street Minutes that the war actually is probably 3 years old now, because they heightened the bombing pretty significantly in September of even before the invasion started. So it's incredible. I'm sure you saw a lot of that devastation even in the limited time of 3 months.
I can give your listeners an idea. You know, we talk about the Katrina aftermath, and it's a very unfortunate thing that that happened, and them showing the bodies on television. But let's flip the coin. Could you imagine the you know, the main invading force going into Iraq, and then the CNN pans to two tractor trailers full of bodies that had been stacked in a makeshift morgue, you know, because of the bombing. That's what we discovered going into the country. So could you imagine CNN showing something like that today?
Right. Well, I, you know, as gruesome as that is, I wish they had found a way to do it.
You know, I do too.
Because I think that this thing is so depersonalized for most Americans. And that's one of the real powerful things of the, you know, what started, as they say, in a ditch in Crawford, Texas, with Cindy and others and all of you joining in. They've made this a much more personal experience for a lot of us here in this country, which we need. We desperately need that.
Yes, I agree. From, you know, in... To get to the Cindy Sheehan tour, this is basically the stories that I've been telling while I was out on tour, going to various congressmen's office or mayor's office. We went to mayor's office in Atlanta, which she didn't show. but, you know, and these are the questions that we're asking. And along with, you know, Iraq Veterans Against the War, we had military families speak out, Gold Star Mothers for Peace, and, you know, all these different groups telling their stories of what, you know, how this war has affected them and their family.
Well, I don't, maybe, I mean, this is all very personal, but for you, can you say more about... The personal impact this has had on you? I mean, I'm not trying to stir up anything here, but I just...
No. I don't mind talking about it. I'm going to be honest. I was discharged out of the Marine Corps. I was rated 20% disabled due to PTSD. And then when I got reevaluated by the Veterans Administration after I was discharged, I was rated 80% disabled. Now I'm in the process of being rated 100% disabled. So the VA is very slow, but that's a different topic.
Right.
But you know, with my PTSD, you know, the VA has been helpful somewhat. I feel that they're still utilizing tactics to treat shell shock from World War II. I don't think that they've really, you know, gotten in step with mainstream. Psychology, because I've had civilian psychologists diagnose me, as well as military and VA. And the civilian is, their therapy is a little bit more in-depth, and they do this treatment called EMDR, which is the newest form of treatment for PTSD.
Okay, let me break in, and just so people understand, I think most do, but that's post-traumatic stress disorder, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Sorry.
Yes,
okay.
That's okay. And so, you know, but through the VA, you know, there's different coping skills that you can learn to live with PTSD, because it doesn't go away. It's something that once it's there, it doesn't ever leave you. You just develop... ways in order for you to live with the illness and to notice signs and symptoms of whenever you're having a PTSD moment. But some of the things, you know, that I deal with on a daily basis is flashbacks, you know, nightmares, and, you know, avoidance. That's one of the biggest problems with PTSD is you just want to, you know, withdraw into your own little shell and not... be seen or heard. But, you know, that's one good thing about the work that I do is, you know, every time that I speak out or I go to a community college or college to do lectures, it's basically therapy for me, because I'm telling my story and people are listening, and they're, and they're seeing the true horrors of war. But, you know, what we're dealing with is we're gonna, you know, almost an epidemic proportion of young men and women that are going to come back from this war emotionally and physically wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the community as a whole to accept this reality and embrace it, because these young men and women, when they come back, they're going to have difficulties with relationships, possibly alcohol or drug abuse. You know, we as a society have to realize this. They're going to come back heroes, sure, but
mm-hmm.
inside, you know, there's going to be a lot of healing process that they're going to have to undergo. And I think if we collectively as a community realize this, we can better understand it and help these young men and women when they come back and they seek treatment or help.
Right. Well, I think that's so critical, because I think the same thing that operates and that keeps us, most of the American public, insulated from what's actually going on in this war can work if we're not careful when people like yourself and others return to say, well, you know, I don't want to hear about it. You know, it should not be confined just to therapists. It should be in the community. People should be able to, the veterans should be able to tell their stories and work through it.
We started a program through IRAC Veterans Against the War
mm-hmm.
called the Vets for Vets program. And basically, you can actually go on deepdemocracynow.org and pull up the website. And if not, I can also give out a phone number for
mm-hmm.
The direct representative. But what this program allows the IVAW members to do is it teaches them almost kind of like a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you have a Vets for Vets program, you get together with other vets in the area, and you basically have a rap session. But
mm-hmm.
it's evolved around the 12-step program, and it's a way for vets to express their you know, their feelings, or you know, how they're, you know, having difficulties with you know, relating back to the real world, as we call it in the Marine Corps. This is a new program that we started through IVAW, which has been pretty successful
mm-hmm.
So far.
Well, it's very interesting to me, not to play a pop psychologist here, but knowing from personal, very traumatic, actually, personal experience from early in my life that has caused me to be an obsessive, addictive person on some levels, I know that I can see that how the experience in a war zone like this can trigger the same kinds of things that people with addictive problems have. It makes so much sense that you'd be based around a 12-step program, which have been very effective for, well, of course, alcoholics, but people with other addictive disorders and so on. And again, I think that it's so important that you guys get the chance to just tell the story, as no matter how gruesome, because I think one of the problems would be that you come home and you get into that, like you say, you withdraw, you avoid, and you start thinking that nobody understands me, nobody understands what I'm going through, and then it just can take you down a pretty vicious cycle.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, boy, I feel just honored to be able to have you tell your story, get it recorded. I'd like to do more of it. I know that another thing you're doing, which is probably therapeutic for you, you have done, is written a book.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about that. I know that from talking to you yesterday that unfortunately this book right now is only in French and Spanish. So
yeah.
Hopefully we can figure out a way to take care of that.
Right. Yeah. So if there's any publishing companies out there.
Yeah.
The English rights are for sale. So.
Okay. So what's the, can you say the name of the book in French? What
sure.
is it in
well,
English?
I can say it in English.
Okay.
You know, the crazy thing about it is, once I sold it to the French publishing company, you know, of course they translated it into French, but they didn't really have any difficulties with doing it. I thought that they were, you know, they'd run into a lot of difficulties with the Marine slang and jargon because I used that in the book, but it was a pretty smooth process.
Hmm.
But the name of the book is called Cowboys from Hell, and it is... actually in the process of being on the press right now. The name of the publishing company is, Edition de Palme, and they are located in Paris, France. And it's also being published in Spanish as well. I had a lot of difficulty with finding a American publishing company. They were worried about slander lawsuits and defamation of character and whatnot. Of course, in Europe, they don't have these laws, so it made it a lot more simpler to go ahead with the process of publishing. But it's basically just a memoir of the time that I was born until the day that I left the Marine Corps. And, how I got from point A to point B. I consider myself an economic conscript. I went into the Marine Corps for financial reasons. I grew up a working class family. And, you know, I talked about, you know, that economic conscript and growing up and being part of the military-industrial complex. How we lived, how we think, how we ate, and the different mentalities of being a Marine.
Well, let's hope it finds a publisher here that can publish it in English or translate it into English or whatever needs to happen. And maybe I'd love to talk to you more about that, but, you know, we don't need to include that as the recorded part. It sounds like a very compelling story. And again, it's one of those things that people need to hear, and it continually amazes me how, you know, we know that our regular corporate mainstream media has been really timid around this and other issues, and it apparently extends to the printing media.
Right.
Well, that's too bad. So what are your, you're going to go to the trial up in Binghamton, New York.
Right.
And so is that basically anything else planned between now and then? That's, you know, relates to this issue anyway.
In October, I'm going to be going to Paris and to Spain to promote the book.
Oh, good,
and,
good.
That's basically it, though, that I have right now scheduled. But after the trial, I'm going on a little mini tour of upstate New York and going to different Peace and Justice Leagues and giving us speeches.
Okay.
But, so I'm looking forward to that, and then off to Europe, and who knows after that.
Okay. Well, any chance at this point you're scheduled to come out to the West Coast?
I'd like to put the challenge to any Peace and Justice Leagues, or if you have Veterans for Peace groups out there that would like to sponsor me, come out to your neck of the woods. I'd love it. My email address is cowboy, the letter N, like Nancy, the word peach.
Peach?
Peach, like the fruit.
Like the fruit, okay.
Right.
Okay.
At hotmail.com.
Okay.
I'm Cowboy and she's Peach.
All right. And Peach, because you do live in North Carolina, don't you?
That's correct.
All right. Well, okay, Jimmy, again, I really appreciate this, and I'm going to check back with you at some point here. And let's would you please hang on the line, if you don't mind, and I'll stop the recording here, and we can talk about some other things, okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much for spending your time with us.
Thank you.
Okay.